We need a lot more action by the federal government.
When there are problems, the media say,
we need big, bold, expensive action from the government.
$2 trillion is a start, but the president must do more, they said.
It's so important for the president to do more than just invoke the Defense Production Act, but actually implement it.
The Defense Production Act lets government force companies to make things like medical supplies.
What is the holdup?
Why not use it now if that would answer their pleas for help?
We're a country not based on nationalizing our business. Call a person over in Venezuela. Ask them, how did nationalization of their businesses work out? Not too well.
No.
Poverty and starvation consume Venezuela.
Government dictating production leads to less production. Even though Venezuela has more oil in the ground than any other country, Venezuelans now struggle to get gasoline.
He waited in line almost 24 hours, only to now be told there was no gas left.
When government orders companies to do things, companies don't innovate. They're less able to adjust to market demand. Unfortunately, although President Trump said he wouldn't order companies around, he later changed his mind and ordered General Motors to produce ventilators. But he didn't need to. The private sector was already on it.
From Ford to General Motors to Tesla, automakers jumpstart production of ventilators.
Other companies retooled to make hand sanitizer.
The Moore brothers usually make premium gin, vodka, and bourbon. Now they're filling a need in a national emergency.
We could probably make and give away 1,000 gallons a day.
Is that just charity? No. If customers remember the good deed, the company will profit later. Ford just retooled to use 3D printers to make face masks. They're pursuing profit, and that's fine. The profit motive delivers the goods. When our government failed to produce enough coronavirus tests, private companies filled the gap. And even MSNBC noticed the difference.
Outside of the government, some progress is being made.
Private companies offered a test delivered overnight, but they were too fast for the government.
Right now, the FDA has not approved an at-home test kit for the coronavirus.
In a crisis, America's heroes are not the politicians who go on TV and brag about how they're in control. The real heroes are the people who do things.
We're not giving up and we're not quitting. We do this because we love this country.
No toilet paper, no nothing on the shelves, you know, so we got to keep going.
Truckers are a part of a larger chain of unsung heroes out there that are fighting hard to keep society together.
But government's rules often make it harder for people like them to help. Before the pandemic, truckers were forbidden to work more than 11 hours a day. At least now the government says,
regulations suspended across the country.
When not restricted by rules, people adapt in countless ways. I'm recording this on my cell phone because I'm not supposed to go to the office. Because people my age are told don't go to crowded places, supermarkets started opening early to let older people shop with less risk.
The store is cleaned and stocked overnight, giving seniors a chance to get what they need.
Since public concerts are forbidden,
many artists are taking to the internet to host free concerts for their fans.
Charlie Puth and John Legend are among the A-list musicians who have hosted gigs themed Together at Home.
When not hampered by regulations, entrepreneurs find new ways to innovate. When government banned dining in restaurants,
servers have switched roles to delivery drivers, while bartenders have turned into sales reps.
Jobs are being lost, but if businesses are free to adapt, they'll create new jobs. Face mask companies are hiring.
If there's sewers out there that need a job, we have them.
Delivery businesses are hiring too.
Amazon is ramping up its e-commerce capacity, hiring 100,000 warehouse and delivery workers.
Walmart is hiring 150,000 new people.
And Facebook's giving out grants.
Facebook just blew me away when they announced a sweeping new effort to invest $100 million in 30,000 small businesses across 30 different countries. They're doing what I want the government to do.
But Cramer, the government would mess it up. The free market adjusts without people telling the companies what to do. American producers don't need production acts.
The largest stimulus bill in U.S. history.
For once, Republicans and Democrats were in agreement.
It was 96-0 in the Senate.
And the House didn't even bother with a formal vote.
The motion is adopted.
They applauded themselves. Only a few expressed objections.
$75 million to NPR, you know, public broadcasting, ridiculous.
$25 million worth of funding for the Kennedy Performance Arts Center here in Washington, D.C. Shouldn't that money be going to masks?
The Kennedy Center has suffered greatly because nobody can go there. It's essentially closed. And they do need some funding. And I said, look, that was a Democrat request. That was not my request. But you got to give them something.
Something they got. $25 million for congressional salaries. $50 million for a museum. Few politicians ask,
how do you pay for it? We're going to borrow it from China? We're going to borrow it from Russia? Are we just going to print the money?
Good questions. Our national debt is already almost $24 trillion. Now it'll jump, percentage-wise, to where Greece's debt was just before unemployment there hit 27%.
The feeling of hopelessness here seems to be spreading.
Greece was bailed out by Europe, but the United States can't be bailed out by others, so how can we pay off our debt? There are really only three options: default, print money, or raise taxes.
Raise taxes on the rich.
You can tax billionaires.
We need to tax the billionaires.
But that wouldn't solve the debt problem. Even if we took all billionaires' wealth, it would only cover about an eighth of our debt. So others on the left now say, don't worry about debt. Just print money.
The U.S. government can never run out of dollars. The federal government prints dollars.
Bernie Sanders' economic advisor says, that debt clock shouldn't alarm us.
It's meant to scare people, right? The national debt, tick, 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 tick. There's nothing to prevent the federal government from creating as much money as it wants to and paying it to someone.
This belief, now called modern monetary theory, has destroyed lives in many countries. Zimbabwe is a recent example. The dictator just printed more money. That meant
you had more money chasing the same goods. More money chasing the same goods meant you needed more dollars to buy the same stuff.
A batch of tomatoes will cost me 10 million Zimbabwe dollars, and a packet of onions will cost me 30 million dollars.
The faster prices rose, the more money the government printed, and the faster prices rose.
It got so bad that a $100 trillion bill was worth only about 40 cents.
On the economic disaster in the once prosperous Southern African country.
Inflation also wrecked lives in 1920s Germany, Argentina, Russia, and Venezuela. Finally, there's choice three. America could just default. But that would eliminate the savings of everyone who invested in America. And it wouldn't solve our problems. When Argentina defaulted, its economy fell apart. Unemployment reached 21%. Once you're deep in debt, none of the options is good. How did we fall so deep in debt when for years politicians have said they'd reduce our deficit?
We have piled deficit upon deficit, mortgaging our future and our children's future. We must act today in order to preserve tomorrow.
We got to deal with this big long-term debt problem or it will deal with us.
But they didn't deal with it. They just talked about it.
Take out a credit card from the Bank of China in the name of our children, driving up our national debt that we are going to have to pay back. That's irresponsible.
$20 trillion. It doubled under President Obama.
And if you include the current stimulus, it's increased even faster under Trump.
It's not compassionate to bankrupt America, but that's the path we're on.
Congressman Warren Davidson's a Republican.
But that's your party doing it.
It's not one party. You didn't get $23 trillion in debt because one party's good on the issue and the other isn't.
I interviewed Davidson before the pandemic.
You voted for some spending bills, billions for the FCC. Why do we even need an FCC?
Well, who else would be able to regulate speech if there wasn't an FCC?
Right, we don't need an FCC, and you voted for this bill.
Well, you don't get a vote for precise things very often. There are things in these appropriations that do need funded.
At least Davidson usually votes against big spending.
We are on a path to bankrupting our country.
We are. But today, most politicians only talk about spending more.
Making sure that we spend the kind of money we need to spend.
We have to do more.
A new stimulus package.
$2 trillion, we redo our roads, our highways, our bridges.
Our government's giving out loans and grants right now. We won't apply for any. We don't think it's right. So more than ever, to keep these videos coming, we depend on you.
please contribute. Press that button.
I'm Andrew Pollack, and in 180 seconds, I'm going to convince you that guns don't create school shootings. Leftist policies do. I know something about school shootings. My only daughter, Meadow, was murdered in Parkland. I spent a year investigating what went wrong for my book. Why Meadow Died, The People and Policies That Created the Parkland Shooter and Endanger America's Students. The Parkland shooting was the most avoidable mass murder in American history, and the policies that made it inevitable have spread to your school. I know what you've heard. We need better background checks. But background checks would not have prevented my daughter's murder. In fact, background checks would not have stopped a single mass shooting in this century. The gun used to commit a mass murder at my daughter's high school was bought legally. My daughter's murderer passed his background check with flying colors. Despite his many felonies, he was never arrested on purpose because of politically correct policies to decrease juvenile arrests. During the Obama administration, multiple programs were pushed on our nation's high schools to lower the rate of kids getting arrested for violent behavior. These programs typically include turning a blind eye to illegal and abusive behavior by students. Broward Schools implemented the Promise Program to decrease arrests, and arrests went down by 70%. It was easy. Parkland gave kids 4 free misdemeanors every year. Reporting felonies to the police was strictly optional. Principals were trained to not cooperate with law enforcement. Because of these criminal enabling policies, today, 52% of Broward County teachers fear for their personal safety. Only 39% of teachers think that if a student assaults them, he or she will even be suspended. This isn't just in Parkland. The Obama administration twisted federal civil rights law to coerce hundreds of school districts, serving millions of the students to adopt these criminal leniency policies. According to a recent survey, these so-called restorative justice policies are now in 42% of America's schools. What's happening in Broward is happening across the country. In Baton Rouge, 60% of teachers say they've seen an increase in violence. In Jackson, 65% say their schools feels out of control. In Syracuse, 66% fear for their safety. 70% of teachers nationwide think that school suspensions have decreased because principals tolerate more misbehavior. And about half think that principals underreport problems. And almost 2/3 of teachers said that there's a student in their class who shouldn't be. Sadly, criminal psychopaths, like my daughter's murderer, are not rare. And they'll be able to pass a background check because we're not reporting and arresting them because of left-wing policies. The same policies that led to my daughter's murder have been forced into schools across America, including yours. I'm Andrew Pollack for Turning Point USA. And I just convince you that leftist policies create school shooters. If we want to stop school shootings, we need to arrest criminals, not ban guns.
Hey, YouTube. Do you think big government sucks? We do too. If you liked this video, you'll love our other ones right here. Make sure that you punch the subscribe button and the like button down there. Thanks for watching.
Hey, welcome back, True Seekers. I know you're all in quarantine and you're really concerned about going outside, but I did have an interesting moment yesterday where someone said, you know what? There's a lot of silver linings here. One of them is no school means no school shootings. And I was interesting. I said, you know what? I'm going to talk to a gentleman this week who knows, who could tell you that you can't stop school shootings unless you actually know how they happen. The book is Why Meadow Died. The gentleman is Andy Pollack, father of Meadow Pollack, who passed away tragically in the school shooting in Florida. in 2 years ago this February. Andy, how are you? Welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me today.
Yeah, I just want to thank you for coming on. I know we don't have a lot of time, and people aren't thinking about this as much as they probably should be, but we will go back to school. Life will get to back to normal. And if they're looking for something to do, I've told several people, your book is BTN. It's better than Netflix, better than anything on Netflix. And so I just want to take 1 second real quick and tell everyone that my issue with your book is I'm not going to remember everything that I wrote. I've got about 4 pages of Audible notes here, and we won't have time to go over much of it. But I remember the way I felt when I was turning pages, when I was reading about how much ridiculous, avoidable nonsense led up to this event, which now you could, I think in your book, you say it was inevitable. And one thing I really like is that you open and close the book with a personal chapter. You call it a manifesto of you saying, here's who I was, here's who I, what I believed, here were my biases then, here's who I become, here's what I believe now. And it's really very moving. Can you give people a kind of quick overview of your feelings on it and why you wrote the book?
Well, I wrote the book to educate parents into what's going on at these public schools, because I didn't know. And now it's a manual, this book. Like any parent or grandparent that has a child in the public school system should read this book and to see what's going on, because it doesn't matter how, like, I lived in one of the safest communities in the country, but yet they allowed this type of person thing to go to school with my daughter and never tell any of the parents about really what's going on. And a lot of parents don't know what's going on in the schools, just like I didn't know. And of course, my daughter, her life, not knowing about the policies that these bureaucrats put in place at a lot of these public schools. So it's really to educate. That's what I did. And my daughter would want every parent in the country to know what happened to her and why it happened. And that's what this book, it tells the truth, not what the media, the fake news wanted about blaming the gun control, the NRA and all that BS. This is the truth of what happened with my investigation that I did over 10 months.
You wrote in chapter 15 that a parent whose child has been beat up at a school by a bully will probably not tie it back to a national policy, nor would a parent whose child was stabbed to death by someone who threatened to bring a knife to school and then it wasn't reported. So when someone says, yeah, I'm sure a national policy had something to do with this shooting, it's guns. We all know it's guns. What do you tell them? You can't unload 16 chapters on them. How do you respond to that? It sounds it sounds unbelievable.
I tell them that it had nothing to do with it. You know what I mean? They allow these type of children in the schools. They take what they do is, in a nutshell, they'll take emotionally disturbed, violent children, okay, and they label them special needs, and they mainstream them into schools, just the regular public schools. You know, people think when they hear special needs, they think of children with cerebral palsy, dyslexia, just some type of learning disability. But they take kids that are violent, and they mainstream them. And that's what happened with my daughter's school. He was so violent, they had to frisk him every morning before school. He killed animals. He threatened to rape kids. They had to follow him around the school in middle school to the bathroom, to his classes, because he'd be screaming profanities, scaring people, hiding behind walls, corners. And he was just evil from day one. But they took it, you know, they had to mainstream them. And there's thousands of kids like the one that murdered my daughter throughout the country in these public schools. It's no, you know, there's the reason why there's none of these shootings are at private schools. You'll see if you look at it. Private schools don't take these type of kids, and they don't, they won't tolerate it. There's consequences. Where in the public schools, when my daughter was at school, the policy was a child was allowed 3 to 4 misdemeanors per school year without ever getting reported to law enforcement. And there's policies still in place at the school where she went to, very similar, same thing.
What's the worst thing you can do? What's the most severe misdemeanor that wouldn't be reported? Just to give people an idea of what that means, what you can do 3 times.
You could sell drugs. You could rob an iPhone. You could assault another student. Those are misdemeanors. You could trespass. You could, you know, selling drugs is rampant in the school districts under the felony amount, and they don't get reported. They could steal an iPhone. And teachers are getting assaulted right now at the highest record numbers in the country. They're getting assaulted and abused because there's lack of consequences.
In the opening chapter, you write a pretty heart-wrenching story about hearing about the shooting, hearing that something had happened, and you do the same thing that every loving parent does. You say, well, it's not going to be my family. It's not going to be me. And then you kind of take us through what it's like to learn that it was you, and you had to go through it. But then later in the book, you did something I couldn't believe. You actually offer to testify on behalf of the defendant in court. Take us through that experience and why that was.
Not to prevent him from getting the death penalty, because he's up for the death penalty, and I would kill him myself if I had the opportunity. So it really, I'm working with the defense only to get information that I wasn't privy to. So because so many people failed, it wasn't just the killer, that it was the sheriff's department, the mental health, the school district, all those people failed, the administrators at the school. So for me, it's all about holding the other people accountable that let my daughter get murdered, not just the killer. He's never going to see daylight. Whether they kill him or not, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. If they kill him, that's great. They put him in a pen for the rest of his life. That's okay, too. But I want to hold all the other people accountable that think it's okay to let a child, let this murderer in the school. And they knew they had to frisk him. He was so dangerous, they frisked him every morning. He threatened other kids' lives, but never told any of us. They never told the parents what was going on in his school. And it's not just my daughter's school. That's what anyone that's listening, or any parent or grandparent out in the country, there's thousands of kids like this, emotionally disturbed and violent, where they're mainstreaming them. Just the shooter in Ohio, he had a year ago or so, it was the Dayton shooter, same type of kid in school. He had a hit list, a kill list, never was arrested, so he was able to go out and purchase a rifle. They were scared of him in school. Similar situation, but parents that have no excuse anymore to say they didn't know this was going on in the schools, because it's happening in over 60% of the public schools in the country where they have these type of policies. So parents, if you're listening, everyone who writes me now, I don't even give them a long answer. I go, you got the options are private school, charter school, or homeschool. And those are your options when you're complaining about your school district. And that's what I tell them. I would do anything to take back time and put my daughter in a private school, because she'd still be alive today. And whatever it would have cost, I would have managed to come up with the money to make sure she was able to go to a private school. And that's what I tell parents, or charter schools, or homeschool. Because it's really, maybe some districts, parents could have a grassroots organization and make a change. But if you read the book, we couldn't, 17 people were murdered in Broward County School District. And the same people are there just about making the same decisions. We tried to make a change and we couldn't change it. So that's why I tell parents, private school.
Part of the reason I want to reach out to you is when I read that last chapter about the failed school board run and trying to change things from the inside, you think, who would you listen to over people like Andy Pollack? Like, why is it you got to come to grips with the fact that maybe people really just don't care or don't listen? And that's why I wanted to have this interview, make sure people remember Meadows' name and learn about the things that you did and that you uncovered. And for the doubters, I know a lot of people didn't follow the case very clearly. They probably just thought, hey, someone got in there with a gun. Shouldn't have happened. Let's put metal detectors up. Problem solved. Talk to us about the institutional issues. Talk to us about Robert Runcie, who people don't know anything about, and the fact that it wasn't just that he got through the gate with a rifle bag. Security guards saw him and didn't do anything. That the Broward County Sheriff, who you would think listened to him talk, deserved a Medal of Honor, basically did nothing, not just that day, but for years prior to that. Talk to us about the institutional failure specifically, so parents really know what you're talking about.
Well, the Broward Sheriff's Office had over 40 calls to the killer's house, and he was never arrested. If he would have been arrested once for any of those calls, for punching his mother's teeth out, he wouldn't have been able to purchase a rifle. A year prior, he trespassed at the school when he wasn't a student there. He could have been arrested for that. Things would have been different. Maybe he never goes back to the school if he got arrested. He was skinning animals. Never arrested. So 40 calls to the house. Robert Runce is the superintendent. He came from Chicago, where he had ties to Arne Duncan. He was the education secretary under Obama. So these policies started with the Obama administration. Let's end the school-to-prison pipeline. Let's stop suspending. Let's lower expulsions and arrests for kids of color. And by doing that, so Runce brought that whole policy to Broward County, where he just stopped arresting and suspending and no expulsions for everyone. And what it does is it creates a culture of leniency throughout the whole school district, where no one starts, you know, everyone's underreporting, no one's getting arrested. And it just creates this a culture of leniency. And this culture isn't just in Broward, it's throughout a lot of the major school districts. So if parents just think it's in Broward, no, this policy is throughout the country. Teachers, like if you could read it, I don't have the stats with me, but teachers are getting assaulted like at the highest numbers ever. And it's going on. So that's why this word bullying came out. There's a lot of bullying going on. It's all due to these policies that are being implemented. And they're not at the private schools. That's why you don't really hear about these type of things at private. Well, and a lot of charter schools don't tolerate it.
You actually, at one point in the book, had a list called What Ifs, and you joked that there were 100 ways that this could have been prevented, and all it would have taken was for adults to act like adults. And but unfortunately, there's a environment of corruption. In Broward, they couldn't even nominate their own school district chief, right? They weren't allowed to because the other one was in prison because of bribery and theft. And there were a lot of people trying to fight from inside the system. But you mentioned at the end of the book, I think it was Ken, the kid who was doing all the great actual journalism when the journalists weren't, that he was really the only one out of this entire thing that got punished because he was talking too much and telling the truth a little bit too much. Talk about your experience at the end of all this, trying to affect change and how that went.
Well, that took a lot out of me. You know, we ran a school board race to try and put the right people in, you know, as school board members so that they could implement the right policies, you know, take those policies out, hold children accountable, because it doesn't matter what color a child is, they need to be have consequences. So you set them up to success in the right direction. And we came up, we couldn't get these people in there. We tried. I worked for months on it. It took, I needed like, that's my rooster. It took me a few months just to recover from all the work we did on this, you know, door knocking. We knocked on over 40,000 doors. We had the early polling. We did mailers. We did so much stuff to try and make a change. But here you had these bureaucrats in Broward County that, you know, most of them were Democrats. This is where I really stopped liking Democrats, is when I read it, when I learned about all these policies and who behind it. You know, the sheriff was a Democrat. He signed on to these policies. The superintendent, a Democrat. The supervisor of elections who got removed in Broward County, she was another Democrat. The whole school board's a bunch of Democrats. So, you know, this is where I really got a bad taste in my mouth, the Democrats, and I started looking into them. And really, most of them were pretty not ethical type of people, the ones in Broward that I met. So, and we tried to fix it, and we couldn't fix Broward. I moved out of Broward. You could hear my rooster. I'm out in the country. I live on a 350-acre ranch.
Oh, wow.
And I'm done with areas like Broward, you know, about living in an area like Broward. But I do have, I started a new organization to help parents and school districts and police departments. It's called schoolsafetygrant.org. You should go on my website, schoolsafetygrant.org. And it's something I've been working on to help law enforcement on response time. It's going to cut response time off of minutes when they're responding to any type of situation or an active shooter. I did a lot of research with another company, and we have this technology. And really, we were throughout Florida and D.C. right before this coronavirus started, showing this technology. And we actually were able to get some grant money to different departments in the state of Florida to help them with their technology. So it's a free grant. And if anyone's listening or they want to check it out, that'd be great. Schoolsafetygrant.org.
Schoolsafetygrant.org. I know the rooster's calling you. I'm gonna link to this and with the hashtag fix it. And I also just I want to close here. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm listening to you. Go ahead.
I had a couple highlighted here. As a parent, I have two daughters. One of them's starting school. One of them has not. And there are times when I read this book. One in particular where the murderer had harassed and physically threatened a girl, and then and you're going to correct me if I get this wrong, the superintendents in their wisdom had basically a buddy system they put together where they paired the murderer with this girl to have her tutor him as part of his, kind of like what they do with Wuhan, where they say everyone in Italy hug a Chinese person. I mean, it terrorized this poor girl. And then a couple of pages later, you talk about how he goes and asks a girl for a hug, and the teacher comes over and taps her on the shoulder and says, yeah, don't hug him. He just got caught masturbating. And I thought, wait a minute. There are adult teachers who get paid to protect kids that allow this to happen, and it just and it snowballs until the inevitable occurs. 2 years have passed.
This is what's going on.
I wanted to share your voice. If you have children, this is a man's book. You need to read his work. You need to understand what he went through and how preventable, hilariously incompetent and preventable this was because of the incompetent and bureaucratic system that's in place that allows these things to happen. Mr. Pollack, I'm going to give you the final word on hashtag fix it.
Well, if I'm a parent now, I would do anything possible to put my child in a private school. I tell people, sell a kidney. Do whatever you can to get your child in a private school or a charter school. But not, maybe small districts that are public are okay, but these mega districts or big school districts that have these type of Nancy Pelosi's running the school districts, they're all the same. Those bureaucrats, these liberal bureaucrats that run a lot of these big school districts, like a Chuck Schumer, like a Nancy Pelosi, you wouldn't want them in charge of educating your children. So I say to them, do whatever you can and get your child, read my book, do whatever you can to put your child in a private school where they're not going to be subjected to violent, disturbed children mainstream, and a lot of lax discipline policies. Kids have consequences at private school where they get away with a lot more in these public schools. So, and that would be my words to most parents now raising children, and you yourself, do whatever you can to get your daughter in a private school.
Andy, thank you for your time. God bless you for the work that you've done, and we'll do our part to try to get the message out. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Yeah, come here, babe. Oh, what you got? Hey, come here.
Want to look in the camera?
Hey, what's that? Say, please subscribe.
Please subscribe.
Yay. Say bye-bye. Say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
TikTok was the most downloaded app of 2019, more than any other app in the country. More teenagers are on TikTok now than use Facebook. It counts millions and millions and millions of Americans as users. But it is owned by a Chinese company that includes Chinese Communist Party members in leadership. And it is required under Chinese law to share user data with Beijing. And TikTok has admitted that it has sent user data to China. To put it bluntly, this is a major security risk for the American people. And what kind of data is TikTok collecting as it runs on our phones? A heck of a lot more than you would think. Images, of course, that users post. But TikTok also collects information about the messages that you send, about the apps that you use, the other apps on your phone. It collects the sites that you visit. It collects your search history. It collects your keystrokes. It collects your location data. It stores all of this and maybe lots, lots more. And I can tell you, as the father of two small children, who already have many of their friends on social media, even though they're quite young, I find this absolutely horrifying, and we know that it's a national security risk. Since our last hearing on this subject, the Pentagon, the Department of State, the Department of Homeland Security, and the TSA have all banned their employees and service members from using TikTok on government devices. In fact, the Pentagon even went so far as to say that employees should have their children uninstall TikTok from their personal devices. That's pretty extraordinary. but actually it's only prudent. And that's why today I'm announcing I will introduce legislation to ban the use of TikTok by all federal employees on all federal government devices. This is a necessary step to protect the security of the United States and the data security of every American.
The WHO, that's the World Health Organization, receives vast amounts of money from the United States. And we pay for a majority, a biggest portion of their money. And they actually criticized and disagreed with my travel ban at the time I did it. And they were wrong. They've been wrong about a lot of things. And they had a lot of information early, and they didn't want to, they seemed to be very China-centric. And we have to look into that, so we're going to look into it. We give a majority of the money that they get, and it's much more than the $58 million is a small portion of what they've gotten over the years. Sometimes they get much more than that. Sometimes it's for programs that they're doing, and it's much bigger numbers. And if the programs are good, that's great as far as we're concerned. But we want to look into it. World Health Organization, because they really are, they called it wrong. They missed the call. They could have called it months earlier. They would have known. And they should have known. And they probably did know. So we'll be looking into that very carefully. And we're going to put a hold on money spent to the WHO. We're going to put a very powerful hold on it, and we're going to see. It's a great thing if it works, but when they call every shot wrong, that's no good.
I do want to ask you about hydroxychloroquine. The president was pushing it pretty strong again yesterday. You said you have prescribed this. I want to talk to you about the effects you're seeing and what it might do for people who take it normally outside of coronavirus and a possible shortage of medicine for them.
Exactly. What we're finding clinically with our patients is that it really only works in conjunction with zinc. So the hydroxychloroquine opens a zinc channel. Zinc goes into the cell. It then blocks the replication of the cellular machinery. So it has to be used in conjunction with zinc. We are seeing some clinical responses in that regard. There are people that take it regularly for other disease processes. We have to be cautious and mindful that we don't prescribe it for patients who have COVID that are well. It really should be reserved for people that are really sick in the hospital or at home very sick that need that medication. Otherwise, we're going to blow through our supply for the patients that take it regularly for other disease processes.
But what you're saying is you're prescribing it and it is working for COVID-19 patients.
Every patient I've prescribed it to has been very, very ill. And within 8 to 12 hours, they were basically symptom free. And